Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode one of season three of the One Board Podcast. I am, as always, Rick White, and joining me is a man who cannot be defined by just one word, so we will use two words, too awesome. That is Ryan Gutowski. How are you?
That's good, that's good. And because I am flawed, two is spelt T-W-O.
Actually, it's T-W-O-O, just completely wrong. Completely wrong.
Yeah, it's not even grammatically, like, inaccurate. It's just spelt wrong, which is fantastic.
It makes us all very sad.
That's good. That's good. That's how I actually start all my reviews, by misspelling everything. And then Aaron comes in behind me and cleans up all the garbage.
Totally. That's how it goes.
So, how are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing pretty well. I've had a somewhat busy day, but now getting to settle in and get back into this podcasting thing. I've missed it.
I have too. We've had a good 4-5 week break from podcasting, but it's been good because I think it's given us a little bit of downtime to do some video content that we've been wanting to do. You can check out our YouTube page and our Facebook page and see that we have been way more active with our video content. So so lots of big things have been going on in the past 5 weeks. So
I know, right?
Yeah, today
it's been crazy, and
the latest developments are that I cannot win a game against my son. So he has beat me at every game that we've played today, and it's really sad. We played Century Golem Edition; he destroyed me. I played Hero Realms; he destroyed me. I played Azul, which he's only played once, and he cleaned my clock. It's real bad. I feel like, it's terrible, man. I don't know what to do.
I'm sorry. We will mourn your victories and the time of your dominance.
I feel like my brain, I've gotten significantly stupid just since the weekend began.
Well,
you know, I don't know why.
We all knew it was going to happen sometime.
Everybody saw it coming, Ryan. Don't be so shocked.
Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm sorry. Thanks, we got there. Well, Ryan, since we last recorded, well, I guess we did have kind of a little special episode while we were at Origins.
That's right. We had a little tag-on episode.
Yeah, kind of bonus content for the people. Yeah. And we had some plans to do some more, but, you know, we'll talk a little bit about how Origins went and kind of explain all the crazy madness that it was. But yeah. I guess we can go ahead and get started, Ryan. Yeah, we were at Origins. Can you explain for people what that is that may not know?
Yeah, so Origins Game Fair has been going on for, I think, since the early 90s, and it's in Columbus, Ohio. It's been there since the late 90s, I believe, from what I understand. And Origins is just a great opportunity to kind of kick off the convention season. You've got Gen Con, which a lot of people know about, even if you're not into board games. Gen Con is kind of like the Mac Daddy here in the United States of board game conventions. Then you've got Essen out in Europe, and you've got UK Games Expo that kicks it off, because that's in May, I believe. But for Origins is really big. I think it's the third largest. I think somebody's screaming at their MP3 player or their phone or whatever and saying, "No, you idiot, you have no clue." Anyway, I'll continue with my idiocy. I think it's like the third largest, but this thing
it's big.
It's big. Yeah. It's there's lots to do, and it's a little overwhelming. This was our first year at Origins. We got press passes, and we were able to cover Origins from the perspective of content creators, not just showing up for it. But I mean, we created content for this thing, and I think we really, as overwhelming as it is, I think we came away with a lot of really good ideas for going into 2019. I think, We didn't see as much as we wanted to, but we saw so many great games, and so many great games popped up and made me a believer in them, even though they weren't on my radar.
Yeah, and you know, if you want a little bit more of us kind of in the moment, our last episode, what we called episode 16, which was kind of unexpected, gives our reflections after our first full day out there, I believe. And we talk about some of the games that we played. We are going to do a little bit of that also today. But yeah, it really was kind of for us a multifaceted experience. And it was hard to think about how do we let people know about this. So, you know, if you want to find out about what we did, our Facebook page, our YouTube channel, we're still putting up stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, we still have content. Yep.
Because of some of the editing that we've been doing. And, you know, we've been putting out a lot of video content lately, and it's just because there was so much good stuff, we can't shove it all at everybody all at once. But Ryan, yeah, I had a great time. It was awesome to get to meet some people that I've, you know, only seen on YouTube, and kind of get to meet them face to face. We met some people from our Punchboard Media group, and that was really fun.
That was really fun. That was the Punchboard Media. Everybody was so welcoming and caring. It was really cool to be at the meetup and get to know people. And I think that it's cool to see, even though we all are content creators and we're all doing this in some sort of different facet, I think it was cool to have this connection point with all these different people. So it was very fun.
That was awesome. And, you know, getting to meet people, you know, I met the people from Tantrum House, who I've, mm-hmm. you know, been starting to follow a little bit closer lately. It was really cool to sit and, you know, play a game with them. Alan Girding over at Tuesday Night Podcast, and also the maker of Two Rooms and a Boom, and the game, a game that just finished up on Kickstarter, That's Not Lemonade. He was at a booth, and he and I talked for a little while, and that was really cool. Just people that, you know, I still feel like I'm somewhat new to this board gaming stuff, and, you know, people that I've looked up to for a little bit, getting to talk to them was really fun. And Tom Vassell, you know, you and I talked to Tom Vassell for a little while. That was fun as well.
That was a lot of fun to meet Tom in person, and just real personable dude. It was really exciting to meet people that you didn't expect to meet. I think of, you know, Soaring Rhino, the folks from Soaring Rhino, Craig and Jeff, they were super caring and just really great down to earth dudes. The podcast Theology of Gaming podcast, meeting them, meeting some of the folks from the different podcasts, Cloak and Meeple, who do a video channel on Punchboard. You know, there, I feel like there were so many different people, and not to mention people like Patrick Hillier on Punchboard, and Eric, who just showed us around, like, kind of gave us the rundown of like what to look for and where to go and things like that. That was really cool. And then to meet people who have heard us before, I think that was the weirdest thing, is to sit down at a table and then talk to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, I do subscribe to your podcast. I'm like, what? That doesn't even make sense in my head, because we're so,
I thought, like, we were the only people that listened to this. Just us three made it and then listened to it.
Yeah, we just listened to it over and over to stroke our egos. So that's pretty much
there
it.
There you go. So, but Ryan, no,
that
if you
was
were
really cool.
If you were to pick a favorite part of Origins, what would you pick?
Favorite part would have to be meeting Ryan Lockett. Ryan, if you go back to our artist, board game artist show a couple weeks prior to the end of season two, you'll hear us talk about different artists that we have a lot of respect for, and Ryan Lockett's in that list. He created the artwork for Near and Far and Above and Below, and just Red Raven Games. The stuff they're putting out is so beautiful, and the work that he does is such hard work. And I have a lot of respect for him, because I think he embodies this, like, that all of this talent, and he's pouring it into board games. He actually just won art. I think he won for artwork of the year for Near and Far at the Dice Tower Awards just like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And so he is a very humble dude, from my experience, and meeting him in person and being like, hey, Ryan, love your work. Talking to him for a minute, and then asking him about Megaland, which is a Target exclusive that Red Raven's publishing, and then having him reach underneath the table and hand me a full retail copy of Megaland was just incredible, because he, like, nobody owes anything to us. I mean, we're a bunch of people that have a microphone and somehow have a website. That's how I see us. But we, to have that opportunity to look into a game, somebody's game that they spent so much time producing, and then to to be given that game, to have an opportunity to actually review it, is just an honor, I think. And so that interaction really sticks out. And I met Eric Lang. That was super cool. Eric was a very humble dude, and he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame at Origins that night. And before he went in there, we stood and chatted and took pictures for a minute. That was really neat.
You took two. That's cheating, but that's all right. I'll let it slide.
Sorry. Yeah.
So I would say my favorite part, I think, was our Friday night or Saturday night punch board media hangout.
Yeah, Friday night.
Yep. Friday night, yeah. You know, often you and I and Aaron get in a position where we are hosting the game nights. And so a lot of our time, yes, we're playing the games, we're explaining the games, but I can honestly say I don't win a lot at board games when I'm introducing them to people. And it's because I realized it the other day, it's because I'm playing four games at once, because I'm trying to figure out what's the best thing for me and what's the best thing for the other three people, you know, on their turn, so that I can be helping them. And by the time it gets back to my turn, I've forgotten what I'm supposed to do for my move. That's not me complaining. Like, winning games, it's fun, you know, when it happens, but it really has a minimal impact on my enjoyment of a game. I would say that the Punchboard Media event, we played a game all together, and, you know, another part of what we do is worrying about whether or not people are having a good time. So yeah, I spend a lot of time trying to, you know, make jokes and kind of do whatever, especially if I think a game's not going all that well. We had a game that we were playtesting, and it was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but man, I laughed so hard while we were playing that game. I mean, we were all being completely crazy.
We were being crazy.
And that, you know, that level of crazy, and maybe it's just nostalgia for back when I was at a campus ministry and was crazy and goofing off all the time, but that kind of energy and excitement and laughing until it kind of hurts a little bit, that's the kind of stuff that reminds me of why it is that I play board games. It's those kinds of moments that you won't forget, that you'll have, you know, some inside jokes from at the end of the night, that you'll, you know, have made friends. You guys ended up talking. I'm terrible with names. What was the guy that
Jacob.
We hung out? Yeah, Jacob.
Jacob, shout really out to cool Jacob. Guy. Super great guy from Germany. Really, like, just such a good dude. And then Brian from Cloak and Meeple actually showed us how to play the game. The game was called Builder. Don't try to spell it. It's spelled incorrectly. So it's on Kickstarter right now, I believe.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we're not reviewing it or anything. I would say it's not perfect, but that there are definitely ways to have fun with it. And I think that's something that I hope people come across. We do a lot of positive reviews for board games, and I think a lot of that is because we do think you can find enjoyment in a lot of different games, depending on how you approach it. We just hope that we kind of let you know who might enjoy these games in particular. But yeah, that was great. I really enjoyed the belly laughs that I got from that experience.
Yeah, that was so much fun, man. That was really good.
Awesome. Ryan Bell, we've got, like I said, we did a lot of interviews and stuff, and we've got an interview from our time at Origins that's coming up. Would you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so we sat down with John from AEG Games. They're the ones who do Smash Up. That's probably the most visible one that you can think of right now. You actually did a review for Cat Lady, which is a game that they produce, and we actually sat down with John to talk about Cat Lady, we talk about Space Base, and we talk about a couple other games that they're producing and some of the things going into the fall and end of summer that they're pushing, some really great games on the horizon for them and some games that your family might enjoy. So check out this interview with John, and we'll be back on the other side of this break. Everyone, I'm here with John Zinzer of AEG. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing really well. Hi, everybody.
Good. We are excited to see you here at Origins, and we're talking about a couple games that you guys have on the docket. One is Space Base. Can you tell our listeners a little about Space Base?
Sure, I can tell you a little bit about Space Base. So Space Base is a sort of a tableau engine building dice rolling game.
Okay.
Its DNA might be Machikoro or craps, right? You take two six-sided dice, you roll the six-sided dice, and then you get the results from those dice. I think one of the things that makes Space Base unique over other games that do this is that it was built so that on every single roll of the dice, all players are actively involved in what happens. You've got two areas. You've got your Space Base, and then you've got ships that you've launched out of your Space Base.
Okay.
On your turn, when you're rolling the dice, it activates the ships inside of your Space Base. And on other players' turns, when they're rolling the dice, it activates the ships that that other players have rolled.
Cool. I like that mechanic of being able to be in every turn, because I think when you're talking about family gaming or games with a group of people, you know, sometimes that lull, that downtime, can really take people out of the game.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Yeah, for my wife, I know Erin, she sometimes, if there's too long of a lull in between turns, she's sitting there staring off at the space and thinking about, like, what
checks
else is going on.
Checks out a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be no problems with that with Space Base. And Space Base is currently my favorite game. I was mentioning before the interview started that I've played it at least 150 times.
Nice.
And you do not have to twist my arm to play it again. I'm excited about
that. So what's the player count for Space Base?
So right now the player count is 2 to 5.
Okay.
But we're actually working on an expansion for the future that will bring that number up to 7.
Excellent.
And so there aren't a lot of games that fit in that 5 to 7 player range
for
big groups or for families. And
that's
so
cool.
And it plays very, it's an interesting product because it plays very differently at 2 players than it does at 5, but it plays just as well. It's 2 players, you get to see your space a whole much more often, and in a 5-player game, the ships that you launch are more important.
Okay, very cool. A game that we absolutely loved is Istanbul. My wife and I got this as a Christmas gift. It was always on our list, but my sister-in-law bought that for us just because of the recommendation that it plays great at 2, it plays great at 5, you know, similar to a lot of your games. And so we got Istanbul for Christmas, and we've played a ton of this game. In fact, that's one of Erin's top 5 games
right now.
She loves the game. So tell us about Istanbul, the dice game.
So a lot of times we feel very lucky to be the you know, U.S. publishers for Istanbul. Mm-hmm. Our partners at Pegasus Spiel have been fantastic, and you know, any game that's won the Spiel is, you know, has a momentum that other games don't
that's
have.
Sure.
The dice game, a lot of times with dice games, the designers try to mimic what they've done in the other game. The Istanbul dice game doesn't specifically do that. You're still moving around the market and trying to collect goods and things, but all of that action has actually been moved into dice.
Okay.
And you play I wouldn't call it a Yahtzee-esque mechanic, but there's a situation where you're sort of collecting dice and choosing which dice to re-roll, and then purchasing from different markets to sort of build up the game, and it ramps differently, and there's a little bit more luck involved, obviously, because you're rolling dice.
Very cool. That's definitely one we're going to have to check out. And then last on our list is Cat Lady. Cat Lady is a game that Rick White has reviewed for our website. He fell in love with it when he went into a game shop. He said, let me teach you this game, Cat Lady. He absolutely loves it. He bought it right there. So tell us a little about Cat Lady and why this might be a good fit for families.
Okay. Yeah, well, so right now it's it is one of our best-selling products.
Nice.
We can't keep it in stock. It was featured at our big game night event that we run at Gen Con.
Okay.
And the whole idea of that event is that we take designs that we like, and we get them out in front of 1,000, 2,000 people at one time, and then what happens with them after that, who knows, right?
Yeah.
But if 1,000 people like the game, buzz happens, and what's happening with Cat Lady happens. So Cat Lady is a line drafting game. Mm-hmm. You have a 3x3 grid of cards. And on your turn, you pick up one of the vertical or horizontal rows of cards. There are cats, there's food, there's toys, there's catnip. And the core idea of the game is that you want to collect cats and then get specific food to make sure that at the end of the game, your cats have all been fed and they score their maximum number of points.
That's cool.
And it is the type of game that people sit down and they sort of like, oh, okay, great. And they roll their eyes and they just grab a line of cards and draft them to start. And then after 2 turns, they'll start looking at the cats and they're looking out at the board and they're like, oh, okay, wait a second.
Yeah.
I need to start getting some tuna, and this cat has a little bit of an ability that works off of that. And so it becomes more strategic without being onerous. And when you're done, oftentimes people just want to shuffle up and play again, which is a sign of a great family game.
When this game hit the market, that's one thing that I heard was that Cat Lady started becoming a filler game that took over things like Sushi Go and things like that. Like, people were like, their families were sitting down and playing Cat Lady instead of some of the bigger box games.
Listen, whenever you're mentioned in the same sentence with Sushi Go, that's a good thing. And you know, the good news, the funny thing about Cat Lady is that we got it, and my first thing that I said was, well, this is a fun game.
Yeah.
But you know, do we need another cat game?
Yeah.
And the designer dug his feet in the ground. He said, listen, I designed a cat game. If you want something else, I'll design you something else. But it should be cats in it. I'm glad we did it.
I feel like the artwork for Cat Lady is simplistic, but still a lot of fun and whimsical.
Yeah.
You know, and then collecting the different items and feeding your cat and things like that. It's such a cool mechanic, and I really, really dig it. So definitely you guys check out Cat Lady, a great family game. Space Base, another one. I see it at our local game shop, Moxie Games, all the time. They have copies in.
Buy it at your friendly local game store.
Exactly. So anything else you want to plug? I know you have the Smash Up, the bigger, geekier box. We're Smash Up fans. And
awesome.
We've got three expansions, and we're starting to run out of room. So
it's
a gigantic box.
Yeah, so the bigger, geekier box has the All-Stars faction, and it still has the Geeks faction in it. And there's a lot more room to collect your stuff. We've got a compiled rulebook, which everybody loves. We've gone through and taken all the expansions. And then we've also got Thunderstone Quest, which is less of a family game, but if you like a crunchy deck builder, it's going to be back up on Kickstarter in July.
Nice.
And as you can see from the box, that's one of the reasons why it's up on Kickstarter. There's just so much stuff in it that it's hard to do any other way.
Very cool. Well, you guys check it out on Kickstarter in July, Thunderstone Quest. If you're looking for a bigger, meatier game, the box for this thing is gigantic. It's a small table, essentially. So definitely looks like a fun time. So thanks, Sean, so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back. So, Ryan, we, like I said, had a special bonus episode that hopefully you'll have checked out, but we did want to kind of end our coverage of Origins when it comes to the podcast with a top five list of the games that we're excited about. Either they're already out or they're coming up very soon. So we want to let people know about those so they can keep their eyes on them and maybe grab a copy if they're excited about it too whenever those games are released. So, Ryan, you want to start us off with our top five list?
Yes, sir. Let's go with Reef. Reef is a new game from Next Move Games. Next Move is an imprint of Plan B Games. They're the ones who did Azul. So, and some people may compare Reef to Azul a lot because there's a grid. You're working with a grid and you're using these little pieces, you're using these chunky plastic pieces. So it's got some feel of Azul, but it's a very, very different game. Basically, you're taking a card on your turn. You're either taking a card or playing a card. That's what you're doing. And so you take a card off the top of the, you take a card from this row of three cards and then a fourth one on the top of the deck. You can pull one of those cards or pay for one of the cards that's on the top of the deck. And you use that card in your hand. You can have a total of four cards in your hand at a time. And you use that card to pick up some new pieces. They're pieces of coral. There's four different colors. I think there's red, purple, green, and yellow. Yeah, sounds about right. So there's these four pieces of coral, and you're building this coral reef on your grid board. Everybody's got their player board. I think that what amazed me about this game is that I went in thinking it was a very kids game because of the colors, the art style, and stuff like that. Instead, it's a very it's a family-friendly game without being a kid's game. There's some depth to it that I didn't expect. And actually, the first time we got a copy of Reef Thursday morning at Origins, grabbed it, and then when we got done Thursday at Origins, we came back to the Airbnb and 11 o'clock at night, me and you were like, we really need to unwind. Let's play some games.
Right.
So, which is what normal people do.
Right. You know, you to unwind from a thing you've done for 14 hours, you do that thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It makes complete sense. We're psychos. Totally. And so we sat down and played three games of Reef. And it was really good. There was some depth there. This game comes out in August, September timeframe. So that's something that you can look for in retail stores. But Reef is a really, really good family-friendly game. I've already reviewed Reef, and we've played it a dozen times already. The guys at work are addicted to it. They love it. Bob keeps asking for me to bring it back each lunchtime.
Oh, sure.
And so... So you played this too. What were your thoughts?
I think, due to its legacy of Azul, a lot of people, like you said, are going to compare it. Yeah. I personally like this better than Azul. The reason I do is because Reef is one of those games where I feel that the player has complete control over their process.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
There's a little bit of, if you might miss a card that somebody else played, you might not have the timing because somebody else has kind of finished up their big plan before you do. But I feel like you can come up with a plan and you're the one executing it with very little impact of other people. And the plan that you can come up with can be like 12, 14 turns long if you're going with it. So there are the cards allow you to lay down two pieces of coral, and then they give you a scoring mechanism. And the scoring mechanisms can be like you have some touching other pieces of coral, or maybe you get points for every stack of three with there's a yellow on top. And if you have one of those cards that gives you a lot of points for one of those setups, you might take several turns to set up your board so that when you finally play the yellow on top of a stack of three, that it triggers and gives you like 25 or 30 points. And that can be one of your strategies that you go is to make big, big plans and just keep building up and building up and building up. And that's what I did. I did pretty well the first few times we played it. And then I think I started to get a little too greedy with how big my plan was. And then Erin kind of swooped in and had a plan that she executed perfectly and got like a 30, 35 point move. And I was like, there's no chance.
Yeah.
But it's a really solid game. I am looking to pre-order it very soon myself and get a copy for my collection because I think it's easy to learn. Mm-hmm. I think people can pick up on making their own plans very quickly without you having to, kind of guide them to it. I think it's a really good game.
That's right. Cool. Let's talk co-op because you and myself and Erin, we were here at Origins. We played a game called Spy Club from Renegade Games and Foxtrot Games, and that was a great game, man. They don't call it a legacy game, but it's a game that continues on. I think there's 5 episodes that you play through, I believe. But it feels like a Hardy Boys mystery. It feels like, Nancy Drew. It feels like that old school spy type stuff. You're trying to solve this crime and there's things that you're trying to deduce, but then you have to work together to get there. And it was difficult enough that adults should find it fun, but it's playful enough that kids are going to really enjoy this one, especially if you've got a kid that's 8, 9, 10 years old, somewhere in that age range, man, even into the teenage years, like I think they're going to really dig this game. And in fact, Spy Club, I think we're going to go ahead and purchase a copy of Spy Club when it releases later this summer.
Yeah. It's got a really cool format where they have a campaign, and each campaign is, like you said, 5 games, but that doesn't hit everything. There are a bunch of different modules that you'll unlock. The results of your game impact what's going to happen. What they call it is a replayable campaign format, because like in Pandemic Legacy, one of our favorite games, we're still playing it, but once we've finished the campaign, we can never play that game again.
That's it.
We can, but all the surprise is kind of gone from it. This is going to be different than that. And just the ability of everybody to chip in, I think, into the conversation to me is a really big deal. I think Spy Club, if you're looking for something to play with a group of people repeatedly, even if they're not kids, I think it's kind of got this element to it where it would remind adults of their childhood, so they would kind of have this connection to it. And, you know, we see people that have like D&D campaigns and something, or like a Gloomhaven campaign. And if you're on the edge of gaming and you're like, I don't want to dedicate that much time, that sounds complicated, that sounds hard to set up, which it is. If you get your hands on Spy Club, it's going to be something you could play with, you know, another couple for several times in a row, and you guys can, you know, schedule to meet every month or something like that, and you guys have a good time with it. And it's probably going to be a little bit more accessible than maybe like a Pandemic Legacy or a especially a Gloomhaven.
That's right. That's an excellent comparison, because I think that some of those other games are not as accessible, even though they're popular. They're not as accessible to the person who's a new to the hobby board games or on the outskirts of it. So that's really, really great comparison. So
yeah. Now another one we kind of saw, and I actually had a little more experience with this one than you did, and that was Subatomic from Genius Games.
It looks really nice.
Yeah, and Genius Games is a company that is working to bring science to gaming. And a lot of people, when they hear that, might immediately shut down and say, well, I don't want to have to like learn. And they might have some experience with games that maybe your elementary teacher tried to break out and say, you're going to learn through while we play the game. And it's like terrible cards, and it feels like Candyland with test questions on it.
Yeah.
If you want to make Candyland worse, add test questions to it. Well, Genius Games has done a better job than that. Genius Games has created board games that fit a theme of biology, cellular biology or chemistry or something like that. The game that I played that I kind of want to bring to our attention is Subatomic, and it is a deck builder in which you are building elements to get victory points. So the game starts off with a deck of particles that are smaller than protons, neutrons, electrons, and you're using those. I think they call them up, down, and energy waves, which is getting into a little more chemistry than I'm super familiar with, but you play those. And so if you play like two up cards, you can buy a proton card that's out in the market, or you could put two wave cards and they'll make an electron. And there's ways to, you know, get cards or to just spend them one time to get electrons and protons. And basically what you're doing is you have a personal mat that is laid out and has markers for electrons, protons, and neutrons. And you're moving your little marker to show how many you have on your mat. And then whenever you have enough to buy an element, you go ahead and spend those to buy that element. And you can, you know, buy them quickly where they're worth fewer points, or you can try to buy them, you know, save up and buy the bigger elements in order to make even more points. My favorite part of the game is that in some deck builders, when you have cards that you can't really use, you kind of just have to discard them. There's nothing you can do about it. That never happens here. They all can be converted to energy, and energy is used to make reactions happen, or they can be traded in for certain things. So you're never going to have a wasted card.
Yeah.
You can at least turn it into energy. And that was a really cool mechanic for me as a deck builder, where, you know, the crappy turn mechanic is eliminated.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that.
That sounds like such a great game for game schooling, or if you're homeschooling your kids and you want to introduce something that's semi-educational. But, you know, I think about the fact that Ticket to Ride helped our youngest kind of know where certain places were on the map years ago. So it's like there's such value in picking a game for the right audience. And I think Subatomic's really cool for helping people understand some deeper topics.
Definitely. And I'm hoping to kind of get my hands on some of their other games to try to get them in my classrooms or the, you know, teachers at my school that might need them or use them. And so I really enjoyed that. I got to do a quick look on Subatomic. That's on our YouTube channel. So if you want to see the cards, hear a little bit more about it from the people that work at Genius Games, you should totally check that out on our YouTube channel.
That's awesome. I'm going to talk about a game that Aaron and I played, and actually we have played this a lot since we came back from Origins, Pioneer Days from TMG Games. They published this at the end of 2017, and I love the art style of it. Like, that's the thing that initially attracted me to it, and I was like, oh man, that art style is really cool. It's probably a small box game, you know, I'm thinking something like Harvest or something like Harbor. But no, this is a big, fleshed-out game. It's actually the first time we played it at Origins when we were being taught the game and we were in the demo booth. It took us about an hour and 30 minutes to play it. It plays significantly faster once you know the rules. Sitting down, I mean, we get through a game now in 45 minutes because we understand how to play. We understand what happens on our turn. And there's a lot of this. There's on your turn, it's Pioneer Days is exactly how it sounds. Imagine Oregon Trail type of thing where you are actually going, you know, trying to fight the elements as you get your community to survive in the 1800s or whatever. And so you've got this, some dice, you roll the dice, you take the results of the die and you pick one of those die to use, and you can use it to get money, you can use it to get a resource, you can use it to get equipment in some cases, you can use it to get a townsperson into your community. There's a lot to it, and there's a lot of levels, and I really enjoy how this all comes together. Like, this game is very fleshed out. Pioneer Days is something that I'm shocked has not gotten more attention. And it shows that other people enjoyed this, because Pioneer Days sold out while we were at Origins. We actually bought the last copy because we enjoyed it so much. They came over to the table. They were like, listen, we're down to our last two copies. Do you guys want them? And we picked up a copy before it sold out. So that is such a good game. Pioneer Days is one that we've played a couple times. And actually, as soon as we finish this podcast, I'm probably playing again.
There you go. Yeah, that was one I did not get the chance to check out, but you guys have talked a lot about it since we went to Origins. So it's one next time I head down to Columbus, we'll have to bring to the table. And I'm sure you won't mind.
Yeah, no, not at all. That one's the one that surprised me, I think. Because some of the other ones, I mean, we played some other games that had been released previously, and they were fine. I mean, I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly the game I expected it to be. We sat down for Pioneer Days, and within 20 minutes, we were like, this is way better than we expected it to be.
Yeah. So, and the last one that we're going to talk about was kind of a surprise for all three of us. It was right at the door of the exhibit hall, and we kept passing it, so we were like, fine, we should check this out. That was Senshi. Senshi is a very interesting-looking game because it's really just, it reminds me of like bottle caps or pogs or something. They're just tiny little plastic, circular, cylindrical pieces that stack on top of each other. And the mechanics are very simple. You are taking the discs from the center where they all start, and you are trying to put them on your personal player card so that later they can be used to score points. You might be, you know, taking some of the discs from other people's cards to kind of throw off their strategy. But basically, it's a very quick game that is very quick to learn, that has not a ton of strategy. Like, you know, like I was saying with, I've already lost my train of thought. When I was saying with Reef, that you can plan out like 12, 14 moves ahead. This is not like that. You can plan maybe two or three or four and have some sort of a strategy, but it has you a little bit of kind of take that, a little bit of strategy, a little bit of luck, but it all kind of comes together in a nice little package that you can play. We played it on a counter while we were waiting for something else to happen, a little lunch counter. We just broke it out and played it and had a good time with it while we were waiting on stuff. So that's one that was affordable, surprising. I think it's something that a person could easily add to their collection.
Yeah. Senshi is a very good abstract game. People catch on quickly, I think. And once you finish the first game, what happens often, what we've seen is, let's play again. I think I can do this, you know, because you have to be a little bit of cunning in when you play Senshi. You have to kind of watch what other people are doing and make sure that nobody's scoring too much of a certain color, take people's colors from them, things like that. So there, I really enjoyed that. And in fact, I brought Senshi in for a team. We had a team lunch and I brought Senshi in. I was like, hey, listen, I know some people don't dig board games, but anybody who wants to play this, come play. Had four of us sitting at the table, taught them how to play. Two people stayed, and we played again. And then the person asked me that next Monday. They were like, hey, can we take that game for our family weekend thing? And I was like, yeah, of course. And so she's got that game right now, and I have to get it back from her because we miss it.
Yeah, you need to definitely get your hands back on that one. It's a good one.
Cool. Well, Rick, thanks so much, man. We love doing this podcast, guys. If you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy the content that we're producing over at oneboardfamily.com, be sure to check out our Patreon. Patreon is a way that we have supporters joining us and helping us to make better content. Running this site and, you know, there's costs incurred and there's things that we do that cost money so that we can bring better content to you guys. We're right now trying to upgrade things to make better live streams on our Facebook page. So if you think that this content is worth dropping a couple bucks for each month, check us out on patreon.com/oneboardfamily. And of course, you can follow us all across social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all at One Board Family. We would be so grateful if we could get you to follow us and just partner with what we're doing here.
Definitely.
On the website.
And I want to plug some great stuff you've been doing lately with Whatcha Playin' Wednesday.
That's a lot of fun, man.
On Facebook. Yeah, you guys have done a great job showing off some of the games. It's kind of like a podcast, but very game centric, and you get to see these games, which is, you know, a very important part. That is live on Wednesday nights, so you can join in, and if you have questions, you get to interact with us and ask us questions.
That's right.
So you can check out our Facebook channel for those, and of course, if you miss it, you can always kind of scroll back through and see if you can find the video and watch it and learn about even more games, because that's why we're here. We want you guys to find out about games that you go out and then you play with your families. We had a couple over on Thursday, our friends Katie and David. I played games with them on Thursday, and me and David beforehand had played Seven Wonders Duel, and he liked it so much, he went out and got himself a copy, and Katie sent me over pictures of them playing it today.
That's cool.
The kind of stuff that we like doing, and it's, you know, I'm not getting paid for any of that. It's just something that is really fun for us and something we hope that we can help you do as well. So anytime you guys have questions or anything, you can reach out to us. What is our email address, Ryan, if they want to email us?
You can email us at contact@oneboardfamily.com. And pay attention to the Facebook page, because we've got a couple giveaways. We've got some board game giveaways. We're giving away three different games over the next couple of weeks. So pay attention to the Facebook page, and you'll be able to enter in to win some of these great, great games.
Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for joining me this evening. And for all of you out there listening, thank you for listening. And until next time, we'll see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.